Okay, guys, thanks for turning up after the party. I was telling the people yesterday who I was presenting to that I've obviously really upset someone on the Tech Edge schedule builder because I got the session before the party and the session after the party and the last session of the day. So I've got a lot of hungover, tired people that are coming to hear me speak. And I'm actually really proud of you guys because if it was me, I would be asleep in the back of an IT pro session somewhere because I would feel so rough to actually come to a coding session. So my name's Lewis Bench. I work for a company called TBWA. We're actually an advertising agency, but I have a unique role in that place. I actually run a team called Devices and Integration, which is where the advertisers come up with some of the weirdest, wackiest ideas of, hey, we want to go and stick a Kinect into a car and let the car drive around its place. And I have to try and figure out how to build these types of things. And last year, I actually traveled to the Build conference with the Microsoft Australia team, not really knowing what I was going to. I was actually going across for some of the Kinect sessions and some other bits and pieces. And it was the first time I saw Windows 8. And I went into these hardware sessions and I fell in love with the hardware side of Windows 8. There's so much there and it's a really, really fun place to be. And I spoke to the Microsoft Australia guys and it's like, this is where I want to be. I want to push this. This hardware side of things. No one really talks about the hardware opportunities in Windows 8. And this is now the 10th time I've presented this session across Asia Pacific. I'm really, really passionate about this stuff. And if you have questions, like, feel free to come and find me for the rest of today because I worked across the whole entire side of the hardware side of Windows 8. Okay, so I've actually done a find and replace in my stack. It used to say Metro, but I've now replaced it for Windows Store. So if there's any grammatical errors, that's my fault because I was trying to be politically correct when talking about these things now. When we build these Metro-style Windows Store applications, we're always spoken about the user experience side of things. Make it look nice, put it in boxes, make sure it's fast and fluid. We never really get introduced to the underlying concepts of hardware and how they can actually improve our user experience. And that's what I want to talk you through today. Windows 8 provides seamless access to a variety of different hardware through managed code. This is a developer experience we never had in Windows 7 or any other versions of Windows before. It's very, very easy to access hardware peripherals. And you can do it in such a way that it's very subtle, it enhances your user experience, and it complements that Metro way of thinking. So what I've actually done today is I've looked across every kind of build session that was possible, and I've condensed it down into trying to talk about the key points of hardware. There's loads more. Obviously, at Build this year, there's 5 days of hundreds of sessions, most of which covered hardware because it encompassed the hardware conference as well. But these are the key elements. And the way I'm going to structure this is the lowest common denominator. I'm going to talk about media because most people have access to cameras and microphones and them types of things. And then going to build up on the extra sensors and functionality that we have access to. So first one is the camera. Camera has been around for a while now. Most people have webcams in their laptops, in their slates. If you don't, you'll have a peripheral camera that you plug in, be it a SLR, Logitech Quick Cam or something like that. They're very, very easy to get hold of. And on top of the cameras, we also have microphones. We have a whole load of different multimedia capabilities. And Windows has done camera relatively well for a while now. We've had this Windows wizards where you can actually plug a camera in, capture images, download them onto the disk, back them up, send them to the cloud. In terms of the user experience that Windows offered, it was fairly good for image manipulation. We even had Paint, and now they've consistently improved Paint. So out of the box, we're getting image editing and functionality. What we didn't do so well, though, was video. Video hasn't really moved. It hasn't really progressed in the last couple of years. And the first thing Windows 8 does is it opens up a whole new opportunity for us in terms of what we can do with video. There's actually a session today by Nick Harris, who's going to talk about building a Windows 8 video experience, looking at all these functionality in a bit more detail, but I just wanted to kind of point this stuff out. So in Windows 8 now, we actually have native support for 3D stereoscopic video. So this is the ability for you to go and get a 3D monitor, plug into the 3D TV, and sit there with a cool pair of glasses on and watch Visual Studio and the words come out on the screen at you and that kind of stuff. It's there. It's available to you now. We can do through code, we can tap into things like Bluetooth headsets, and we can integrate call type functionality, so you could extend Skype so you can walk around with a Bluetooth headset on and use that kind of functionality. We can listen to or movies via these functionalities as well. We have native support for industry standard DRM, which isn't necessarily such a good thing as a consumer, but as a media supplier, it's really great. We have play-ready support built into WinRT, so Metro apps can just consume that functionality. One of my favorite ones is the Play 2 functionality as well. And if you're not familiar with Play 2, this is industry standard DLNA. This isn't like Apple where you have AirPlay and it's a proprietary standard. This is industry standard, which means using the Play 2 contract within the Metro apps, you can push videos out to any DLNA application on your network. So that's going to be your brand new LG smart TVs, your Xbox, that kind of stuff. It's a native functionality built into the operating system you can subscribe to and just use. So these are really great enhancements. And they all live in the same namespace. We have a very rich media namespace now. A whole load of different bits and pieces in there, and it would take me days to actually cover them all in detail. So specifically today, as we're talking about hardware, I'm just going to talk about the capture side of things. And in the capture side of things, we have two very distinctive controls. The first one is the camera capture UI. And I'll talk you through that in a second. Second one is media capture API. The camera capture UI, this is a control. This is part of the operating system, non-customizable. It's literally there, same as a file explorer, for you to tap into a camera, get a photo or get a video, return it to your application. We've never had this in Windows before. It's something that people have pioneered for a long time. If you go to the Hanselman blog, Scott has actually talked about the inconsistent experience around using webcams across different vendors and different platforms. There's never been one standard. There's never been one consistent wizard that allow you to go, yeah, I want to capture an image and I want to bring it into my application. It's also always been done through unmanaged code, and you're normally p-invoking into the Win32 APIs to allow you to capture images, which seems really stupid because it's something that we actually do quite a lot now. If you look at all of your Twitter clients and that kind of thing, you want to be able to bring images in from the camera as well as the file system. So the camera capture UI does that for us. If you wanted to do a little bit more though, and break out of the restrictions and the Chrome of what Windows offers you and just tap into raw media streams, be it video, image, or audio, we have to go into an API. And in the same namespace, we have this media capture API concept, which we'll also show you through in a sec. So this is going to kind of be death by slides, which isn't necessarily the best thing with a hangover, but I'll try and break it up with a couple of demos to talk you through exactly what I'm talking about. So the first one I want to show you is this camera capture UI. And really the best way to show it to you is exactly how Windows is offering it up in one of its own applications. And the obvious place that's going to sit is in the camera app. I'll come back to that bar in a sec. So this is camera capture UI in its essence. Like Microsoft has built one app with one control and they've labeled it camera. So if I want to bring this into my application and be able to capture photos and push them to Twitter or whatever I'm doing, this is the control that I'd be using. I can't customize this look and feel at all. All I can do is I can tell the control whether I'm capturing a still image or a video image. It's a consistent experience throughout the application, so any application that's going to be capturing images, this will be the look and feel. And it's fairly consistent with the other controls, so File Explorer, the share contract, stuff like that. They're consistently across the application. They help improve the user experience. So it's a nice little interface, very, very easy to use and quite rich. I have these camera options here where I can actually choose which camera I want to pick, and I can choose the resolution. I have a timer so I can strike a pose before I capture the photo, and I can toggle between video mode. That's just how this application has set itself up. I'll talk about actually how we bring this into our application in a sec. By me actually clicking the image, it captures an image, and I can now flip back to my shot. So that's what it looks like in a Windows application. What I've actually done, and this is going to be interesting to try and preview to you because I've got to jump between two devices here. I've built a very, very small demo application. When I've actually presented this in the past, I've always used the SDK samples, and it wasn't necessarily the best way of explaining it. So being tech ed, I was told tech ed's all about business, so I've tried to build a line of business application. I'm not a UI developer, so please don't criticize the look and feel of this application. I work on devices. So let me quickly show you what I've done. Once it copies the file across. Okay, so there's a running joke in my presentations, and this is mainly with Microsoft Australia, so you're not going to get it here, but I, for some reason, always end up talking about my fiance. So I had a challenge when I put this presentation together that I had to somehow include a business app and my fiance. So just to put some context to this, my fiance is actually now training to be a personal trainer. So when I thought, well, I'll build this business app up, I will build it around what she's training to be. And it actually worked. It was quite easy to try and integrate hardware into a personal training app, which seemed like a bit of a challenge at the time. So here's my fairly basic line of business app for managing their personal training sessions. So I can go into clients and I can see a list of her clients. And I can actually now jump into the clients and actually see that client record. But it would be great if I could actually take a photo of a client, because apparently the first thing you're taught as a personal trainer is never forget a face or a name, because it's embarrassing. So for me, what I've done is at the bottom here, I've got an app bar with a new photo icon. If I actually hit this, I jump straight into that camera capture UI. That's exactly the same experience as you saw in that camera application. Looks exactly the same controls. You'll notice one difference here, and that's because I've gone to the slate instead of my computer. I've actually got the options to change camera. This is more important in the new generation of Windows, because these mobile devices are going to have a front-facing and a rear-facing camera, so you have to toggle between the two. Exactly the same scenario. I can hit the button. But what will actually happen is you're presented down the bottom here. It's a little bit of a richer experience. I can actually crop that photo now. I can hit OK, or I can hit retake. Hitting OK should hopefully bring that back into my application. So I now have a little thumbnail of that image back into my application.
Given that that was a thumbnail, does it recognize or can you code to get a resolution that's not super large given you only want a small display?
So you'll get the full resolution image, and there's a method that's attached to that image of get thumbnail, so you can get the two. If you wanted to actually do some manipulation, you have to dive back into, as you would in normal C sharp, the actual system.drawin namespace and actually resize that kind of stuff. So what I'll do here, you can see my Visual Studio. I'll actually show you the code that's actually generating this and how simple it actually is. I will show you C sharp. I've on my deck. I will actually then talk you through the JavaScript equivalents as well. So I'm using Caliburn Micro here because I'm in New Zealand and it's a nice New Zealand product made by the Maker Metro guys. So I'm just going to dig out my view model. So that's all the code that is needed for me to actually capture that photo. So first of all, I go into that namespace, that Windows.media namespace, or Windows.media.capture namespace, and I go new camera capture UI. From there, it's an async method, and hopefully by now you'll be familiar with this async functionality that we have in C# 5 and WinRT. So I'm saying async method, go and capture me a file, go and capture me an image, and I'm passing an enumeration of photo. That enumeration can either be photo or video, depending on what media I want coming back to me. That will go that hand off to the operating system. The operating system will go and do its thing, and then that thread will then wait until the operating system returns. In C#, I'm actually passed a raw image file back, so a binary image file, which then I do some file system operations where I convert it back to a bitmap image and then bind it back onto the UI. Very, very simple. So we're now able to capture a photo in no more than 5 or 6 lines of code. Very, very easy compared to the previous experience we had. So I'm not sure where this came up, because I haven't actually managed to get to the other Metro sessions, but when we work with devices, we have this app manifest file where we actually have to ask permission to use any of these devices. And you would have seen when I first launched that camera app, I got that allow bar, that permissions bar. And this is really, really important. It's for any device that you declare it, and you also plan around it as well, because users can say no. So they may not want you to access the camera. They may not want you to access geolocation. So you have to plan around these types of things. But first of all, you do have to ask for the permission. And asking for the permission can be as simple as going into the app manifest file and ticking the boxes you want, or editing the XML file and adding these nodes in. When working with the camera controls, you always have to ask for the camera and the microphone. And that's just because you always have that option of toggling to video, even if you've disabled it by code. If you're a JavaScript developer, the exact same thing I've done is achievable. We're diving into the same namespaces, virtually the same code. We're using that async functionality with the then keyword. We're getting that callback, but instead of having to do file system operations, we're actually just getting a reference to the URL, and we're just binding that to an image tag. Exactly the same thing with video as well. We're toggling that enumeration there. So if I wanted to do something a little bit more advanced, I wanted to make the next Instagram. I wanted to take a photo and crappy it up a little bit so I can post it to the internet. I don't have access to that. I don't have access to the raw image stream coming in. I have the image after it's done. I could send it off to a service to do that, but I can't edit the image. If I wanted to build an augmented reality app, I can't capture photo and start editing it on the fly using these controls. So I have to dive into an API and build stuff back up again from there. And that API specifically is the Media Capture API. So this is how it looks in JavaScript. Fairly similar experience, but we're not getting a control. We're just getting access to the raw underlying media, and then we go and bind it onto controls afterwards. So what this one is doing here is it's actually using the HTML5 video tag. It's going off and it's asking the operating system for the video stream coming from the camera and binding it back into that HTML5 video tag. This one I will jump into an SDK demo, because I didn't have time to include it into my application in terms of the video capture, but it's quite an interesting one. So here I'm just in a standard XAML style application, and I hit start device, which is initializing the underlying camera, and I hit start preview. I now have that same image from the same camera appearing in my application. I've broken outside of the OS Chrome. It's now being brought into my application. I can then hit start record, and it's actually recording video, and I can hit stop record, and it stops video. I can adjust the, and it plays back. I can adjust the brightness, the contrast. I can also go down to here. I can hit start device, start record, and I can actually add effects. So what I'm actually doing now is I'm taking that stream, I'm handing it off to a direct show library, and now able to manipulate it. So if I wanted to build an augmented reality application, this is how I would do this kind of stuff. I would start getting the stream, I'd look for specific information. I could maybe combine it with location information and start superimposing labels and bits and pieces on the top of it. This one as well, because you're controlling the experience in its entirety, there's a few certain things you have to take into account. And one of them is demonstrated here, but not so well because I only have one camera, but that's the ability to switch cameras. So what you have to do is when you code this up, you have to say, I want to access this camera on the device. And Windows actually offers you an API that says, get all cameras, and I'll talk about that in a sec. But you have to bear these little bits in mind. Once you break it outside the Windows Chrome, make sure that that experience is still consistent and it meets all the Metro principles in terms of user experience. So back to my application. So as a personal trainer, let me actually run it. So as a personal trainer, obviously my main objective, apart from making people fit and healthy and run up and down the beach, is to get paid. So I was wondering, like, how do I get media capture media capture APIs into a personal training app when I'm already capturing a photo? And then I come across one of these things when I was playing around with something for work. So this is a 3.5mm audio jack connected to a credit card swipe. So I can now plug this into my Samsung Series 7 slate and can use the media capture APIs, and here I can actually go now and hit my credit card button down the bottom. I can swipe my credit card, which will then capture how the device works. It will capture an MP4, I pass it off to the library, supply it to the device, it will then tell me the credit card number I've just swiped, which can then be sent off to a cloud-based credit card processing service. You see these in the US by a company called Square. Over here in Australia, we also have PayPal here. It's the same types of concept. This is a proprietary one I've just gone and bought off the internet for a couple of dollars and just plugged it into their API. Very, very powerful extension, because we're now accessing the media streams through raw APIs. We can do some really, really interesting stuff with them. Yeah, so this is capturing audio. So this is exactly the same thing as what I've just talked through in JavaScript. Same theory. We're capturing an audio stream instead. And this is quite important if you're doing things like voice recognition apps and that kind of thing. You want to bring in raw audio streams and process them on the fly if you don't necessarily want to process credit card swipes. Good, you can read that. Okay, so the next one, sensors. This is kind of moving up in this layer of accessible hardware. And the reason for this is because when Microsoft announced Windows 8, and specifically Windows RT, it came out with a minimum hardware specification, which means that any Windows 8 slate or Windows RT ARM devices should conform to have a certain minimum hardware spec. And that hardware spec looks something like this, that everyone should at least have access to a camera and a microphone, everyone should have access to some forms of sensors, and these are ambient light sensors, combination of motion sensors, location provider, and mobile broadband GPS functionality. And these go up in functionality. And in terms of desktops, this is kind of how they're staggered as well. The ambient light sensor, you'll normally see in a lot of ultrabooks because it's used to conserve battery life, because it changes the display contrast based on the light around it and reduces the battery overhead. But the one that's actually more available to everyone is location. So what's actually surprising about location now in Windows 8 is everyone has access to location provider as long as the user accepts the permission when that allow bar comes up, but every single Windows 8 machine will provide you location information. That's no matter if it's a desktop, a laptop, a slate, whether it has GPS or not. And the way this is done is via a process called the Windows Location Provider. And the Windows Location Provider is building on functionality that was offered in Windows 7. We had access to location for information in Windows 7. It was there in IE, it was there in Firefox and Chrome through the HTML standards. We could also go and download some plugins from various people if we didn't have GPS sensors that allowed us to set this information as location information. But what they've done in Windows 8 is they've built this location provider up because they want to stagger the amount of location information available. So they want to make sure it's a consistent experience no matter what. So if you're on a PC or if you're on a slate, it's always there. And the way it kind of works is if you're on a desktop and you're on a wired internet connection, it will do an IP lookup. It will hit that register of IP, that database of IPs and say, where is this IP being issued from? It will then return you the address of that IP. So it will be a state, most will be a state or a city-based accuracy. If you're on Wi-Fi, well, we know from the news that people drive up and down the street all day looking for Wi-Fi SSIDs and geotag them SSIDs. So it then moves to that piece of functionality. It will look for, based on your SSID, where you actually are, and it will be a little bit more accurate. If you're on mobile broadband, it will use cell tower triangulation to try and find out where you are. And lastly, if you have access to GPS, it will then say, yes, we know where you are based on the satellites. So no matter where you are, and as long as you're connected to the internet somehow, you should have access to location information. And this is one of my favorite ones to talk about how we can improve user experience just by using simple sensors. And it's fairly easy to implement. So as a reminder, we have to declare that intention, that geolocation intention. And this is most probably the most important one we do have to declare. There's huge privacy concerns around distributing location information to apps. And you'll have to include, when you submit to your store, your privacy policies and what you're doing with this location information to make sure it's not insecure and it's not going to end up on FBI computers and available on the internet and stuff like that. So this is JavaScript. This is quite weird because you can actually disregard this if you're a JavaScript developer, because Windows 8 fully supports the HTML5 geolocation standard. The Windows geolocation APIs are available to you because the APIs are consistent no matter what language you code in. But if you're a JavaScript developer, you have applications that use HTML5 location already, just use the HTML5 location functionality because it does work. So coming back to my CRM example, I've always talked about how we subtly use location to improve user experience. And in a line of business scenario, if I'm a mobile salesperson or I'm a personal trainer and I move from group to group to group to group, the first overhead you're going to have is you have a list of 200 clients that you're going to have to try and filter down somehow. And you can filter them down by having a drop-down box that says filter by my Auckland City clients when I go to that particular gym. But wouldn't it be great if just the application done it for you? It knows where you are and it knows your nearest work location, so it just filters that information down. It does it very, very subtly in the background. It's a very low overhead process, very easy for a developer to implement. So why don't you do it? It's a user experience enhancement consistent with that Metro application. The other types of applications that use this information obviously really well are going to be maps applications, by dropping a pin on a map to say this is where you are at the moment and maybe these are the routes you want to get to. And even something like the weather application. When you load up the weather application, it asks your location because it thinks you want to know about the weather where you are. And then the secondary option is finding alternate locations. So I just want to show you how easy this actually is to integrate in C#. Wrong view model. So the way I actually work is I actually put all of my code in services, no matter if I'm accessing a REST-based service or local APIs. So I'm actually just going to jump into that service, that geolocation service I've actually written up. And that's all the code I need to access this geolocation functionality. And what I actually do is, if I run it on my PC now, it will actually go off to get my IP, it'll tell me that I'm at Sky City, it'll go off, geolocate that, come back, and it will tell me I'm in Auckland. Fairly, fairly accurate. But actually attached to this object is enrichment from Bing Maps. So they don't just tell you your longitude and latitude, they tell you the potential street address that you're actually at. So you don't have to worry anymore about getting a longitude and latitude and then hitting the Bing Maps API and doing a reverse geolocation to try and get an approximate location. All of that's now provided within its API. It's nicely, cleanly wrapped, makes it fairly easy for you. You also get a whole load of other information. So you get your coordinates, so longitude, latitude, which hopefully is self-explanatory if you've done this kind of stuff before. You also get an accuracy coming back, which is an accuracy in meters. So you can try and work out how confident that you are that where you are. And obviously for something like a CRM, it doesn't matter too much. For a mapping application, it might be integral because you could think you're a couple of kilometers off for your current location. When you actually work with this type of stuff as well, take into consideration, it's not necessarily going to be 100% accurate. And I actually found this out in Darwin when I was presenting, because Telstra, the telco over in Australia, they've taken a whole bunch of IP addresses from a point of presence in Adelaide and reassigned them to Darwin, but never updated the database. So I got cocky and I went on stage and it's like, hey, I'll do this geolocation demo and I'll hit F5 on my machine and I'll tell you exactly where we are based off of my IP address. And it comes up and says, you're in Adelaide. And it's like, it turned out the IT admin at the end told me this had just happened, so they hadn't got around to updating it. But you may get some failure in this type of functionality as well. So this is the reverse geolocation. So I can just hopefully return my city. You can't with this piece of functionality because it's not necessarily available across all of the Windows location APIs. If you wanted to do that, you could use specific APIs for the GPS to return altitude data. And what I'm going to do is hopefully go in here and uncomment that get geolocation and put a breakpoint in that service, which is there. And I'm just going to run it on this machine. This machine doesn't have GPS. It doesn't have broadband. It doesn't have any of the features. It's just a standard Ultrabook-style machine. So that's the permission. So this is, because I've declared it in the app manifest file, it's explicitly asking whether I actually want to use my location. I can block that. So as a developer, you have to take this into consideration if I hit block. And I can block it at any time. You can go into the settings menu and you can revoke these permissions. So don't start abusing this stuff because people will revoke it. If I hit allow, hopefully my breakpoint would have fired. Or it will fail with a com exception. Okay, I'm not sure what's going on there. Sorry? I can't hear. Ah, maybe that's why, yeah. It's because I'm actually debugging over cable to my PC here, so I've got no external network connection. So no network connection, so I can't be cocky. Second time it failed in 10 presentations, so I'm now on an 80% pass rate. Okay. I've got loads to get through, so I'm going to get back to these slides. So that's the API. You've seen it in C#. You've seen it in JavaScript. A very, very easy piece of functionality. Great usability enhancement in both line of business and consumer apps. Didn't work, but there was my slide for it. Okay, sensors. We have this other sensor stack. So we have location. It's always there. We can attempt to use it. It may fail. But sensors is the next piece that it's consistent across a lot of applications, and especially when we start to look at these mobile style applications as well. We're using them every day and we're not really thinking about them. This is the way you interact with sensors in mobile apps, and you don't even think you're using sensors when you actually do these types of things. It just comes naturally to you because that's the way the Metro philosophy works. It's a natural user interface, a natural flow. And this is, again, how we type to, we build this user experience up by using hardware as well as looks. And these are some of the basic scenarios for sensors. And these normally translate into physical, tangible things we do in everyday life. May not necessarily not be perfect, but like shake. Like ever since I've been a child, shaking something like Etch-a-Sketch days, shake is delete, or shake a child because they're naughty and you want to try and stop them to do something. So that gesture translates back into, I don't have kids by the way, so that translates back into the application. Rotate, like naturally we rotate something and we expect the application to rotate. So the sensor information comes back and says it's rotating, so we want to translate that UI. And flip, I actually learned this one from this roadshow, the roadshow I was on. On a Windows phone, apparently if you flip a Windows phone, it means be quiet. So it's a consistent gesture that appears from the hardware and from these sensor scenarios. As I said earlier, the light sensors, they're available in most Ultrabooks now. So this is another one, which is a subtle user experience highlight enhancement that you can build across your applications and be fairly confident that modern PCs will have access to it. And again, coming back to my personal training app, as a personal trainer, my fiance is outdoors, she's on the beach, and then she'll go into a gym, and then she'll be driving to her next client, and she's going high contrast, bright sunlight into a dark room, into various places. So wouldn't it be great if we just subscribe to that sensor and say, if it's really, really bright, we adjust the contrast of the app? And in XAML, this is easy. We just use that view state the visual state mechanism to just transition and transition the styles out, so we go high contrast style into dark color style. Very, very, very easy things to do. So all of this kind of stuff lives in the same namespace. We have this windows.devices.sensors namespace. Everything I've been talking about since media has always lived in the Windows devices namespace. And we had geolocation, now we have sensors. Sensors, they've actually broken up a little bit more than geolocation, just because of the way people naturally use sensors. So people don't necessarily care about the maths, the underlying maths and the logic involved in actually using sensor information. It can get quite hard. So Microsoft have been really good to us, and they've just given us orientation data. So they've told us whether we're kind of in portrait mode or in landscape mode for slate-based devices. So it's nice and easy for us to react to. It's just an event we subscribe to, it's there. We're not doing any maths. On the other end of the scale, we can get the raw sensor information. So if you're doing something in academia or gaming that's dependent on specific gestures, specific scenarios around these sensors, we can subscribe to every single piece of hardware through managed code and get that raw information back again. So we can get the lumens in terms of light meter, we can get the coordinate, the vector information based on motion stuff. If you're kind of in the middle and you're not a hardcore, like nerdy person that wants to spend like time working on maths, and you want a little bit more than just orientation data, we have this concept called sensor fusion. And if you're a phone developer, you'll be fairly familiar with this because it was around in phone 7.5 in the Mango release. And what sensor fusion is it's Microsoft research building a whole bunch of APIs that take all the raw sensor information and makes it a little bit more useful. So instead of us getting GPS information and orientation information and bits and pieces to try and work out where exactly we are and which direction we're facing, we have this compass API that says you're facing north. We have exactly the same with inclinometers and device orientation as well. And the inclinometer is quite an interesting one because in a session before this, normally there's a picture of how different people use devices. And some people may have a device on their lap, some people may have a device sitting up, some people may be in bed, like reading on a device. And when you actually are using these different devices, because like they're vertical or they're laying down, and then you try and rotate them or you try and rotate them this way, you're actually switching between different sensors. You're switching between an accelerometer and a gyrometer. And if you're going to do all that yourself, you need to think about these things. So you need to understand the raw physics involved in the sensors and kind of build that up, build these APIs up. But because research have done that for us, it will actually just tell you that there's a rotation going on, but it doesn't care which sensor it's coming from. So very, very easy to use. I was going to go through a sensor demo, but I've actually switched it up for something a little bit more fun in a sec. So this is exactly how we actually get access to the sensor information. So all of the sensor, again, JavaScript, the C# should hopefully be self-explanatory. I haven't got a demo to show you for this one. All the sensors are fairly consistent. We go into the device's namespace, we go into sensors, we pick what sensor we want. So it could be accelerometer, it could be gyrometer, light sensor, compass. We say get default because you might have multiple attached, but it's fairly unlikely. And then we just attach these event listeners and we just get a callback. And every time something happens on that sensor, we get a callback. The arguments are the information we want access to. So in this one here, we've got an accelerometer. We get an X, Y, and Z coordinate, which is basically the position on the accelerometer. Very, very easy to use. Very, very easy to incorporate into an API. As I said, moving the tablets is a great example of how this works in user experience. In gaming, you get this whole extra thing around gaming, like you can drive a steering wheel with your game, and that's all sensor-based input for a game design. Okay, I've got 20 minutes left, so I'm going to jump through this one. This is exactly what I've told you in a nice, pretty diagram. If you don't have access to Windows 8 standard hardware and you want to develop, so I have a build slate here. I have a Samsung Series 7 modified device. So I have access to all of this hardware, and I can develop with it. But there wasn't a lot of these distributed. And you want to go out and you want to try and build these sensors, build support for sensors, and you don't have access to it, you can actually buy one of these. And from a company called STMicroelectronics, they simply plug in via USB to your desktop or to your laptop, And they've got all of the Sander sensor stack on them, so you can actually move them around and chuck them up and down, and it will give you the same WinRT feedback that you would get if you was using a standard hardware device. May not be so important now we're moving into release and we're starting to see more devices hit the ecosystem, but a year ago when we were trying to do this stuff and we didn't even know what was going to turn up, it was quite important. The simulator doesn't. The simulator has rotation information, so you can rotate and you can subscribe to the device rotation events. But if you want to start like shaking and things like that, it doesn't simulate gestures. In phone, we actually had some clever guys that hooked up a Wiimote to Windows 7, so it exposed itself as an accelerometer into the sensor data. I haven't seen that ported to Windows 8 yet, but it's perfectly feasible. There's no reason why you couldn't just go and buy a Wiimote. It's a Bluetooth connection, write a small driver for it, and be able to shake it and get the same inputs. Okay, quick recap, if I didn't skip through the slides. Sensors, geolocation, very, very easy to use, but they offer considerable enhancements to applications. So take a look, play around with them. When you're designing your user experience, think about how you can use these things as well as making things in nice pretty squares and nice and fast and fluid, but the UI guys will tell you about. Okay, this is my favorite one, NFC. This is what this presentation was originally going to be about. I was going to talk to you about for an hour on NFC, and the content owner said, you can't just talk about NFC, it's not that important. But I love this technology. Is anyone familiar with this concept? A couple of people. If I had have asked this 2 or 3 weeks ago, most people wouldn't have been overly familiar with it, especially in Australia. The RFID bands you're holding helps the understanding of this because you've been playing with a similar kind of concept all day. So NFC, essentially RFID version 2.0, it's the ability to read and write onto tags and actually onto devices as well. We have NFC in Windows 8. We've also announced that Windows Phone 8 will have full support for NFC as well. It's a great technology. It lives in the networking namespace. It's the one thing I'll talk about today that lives outside of a devices and media namespace. And it lives under this little proximity grouping. And proximity covers all proximity technology, so Wi-Fi Direct, NFC, and Bluetooth. Specifically, I'm only going to talk about NFC at the moment. So when we look at NFC, this is the ability to put two things together and they see each other. So we have a device arrive to device deployed. The NFC comes in two forms. It comes in a passive form, which are little microchips. These are stickers. They're perfectly flexible and they move around, but they actually hold 1 kilobyte of data. So I can actually read, I can read and write to these devices using Windows 8, using a Windows 8 proximity enabled device. As an advertiser, this is quite important to me because it means I can actually go and have smart posters. I can store 1 kilobyte of data on a poster and distribute these posters into any traditional media placement around the country. As a logistics company, I could stick these on boxes, and as boxes were being passed out between couriers, I can read and write this information back to the tag. Fairly similar way to how we was doing RFID, apart from these are read, write, and reusable. RFID was write once and only reads, so it was just a tag number it was reading from. This holds any data you want to store that you can compress down to 1 kilobyte. So this tag at the moment, not that you can see it, is actually holding an XML file. It's not powered, there's no battery, but it's storing an XML file for me. What actually happens is when I touch this tag to the back of my slate, it's an electromagnetic charge. The power jumps from my slate to this, it charges a chip for a microsecond, it reads the data back off again, and it's passed back in. Windows 8 does some magic, and it really looks like magic when I play with this stuff. That it manages to read that information off, gets the binary, bubbles it up for an event, and say, hey, we've got an NFC device that arrives. And it then gives you the raw binary information. So I'll quickly show you this working on my slate. Actually, I'm going to show you it in Visual Studio first. So for me, this has always felt like magic. I fell in love with the original Surface, the big Surface, and that ability, that concept of being able to put a device down and transfer information between the two devices. For me, this is... Oh, geolocation's still broken. For me, this is exactly that scenario played out for real. There's no smoke and mirrors here. This is actually going to work if I can get my demo running. Okay, so you can't see my slate, but I'll actually show you the slate in a second when I do a second NFC demo. So what I'm actually going to do in this proximity service that I have open, I put a breakpoint in. So in the constructor here, what I'm actually doing is I'm going into this networking namespace proximity get default, same as what we were doing with sensors. We're saying we want the default proximity device to come to the Pi. We then want to subscribe to an event, which is device arrived. We can do this in C# and JavaScript. The fact we can do this in JavaScript is phenomenal to me, that we can make two devices talk to one another with low-level networking stacks in JavaScript. It was my favorite thing at build. So I'm going to take this little sticker here, and I'm going to put this on the back of my slate. And you see that event has now come in. It's very, very quick, very, very responsive. So I have that event now, and you'll actually see I've got two. I'm subscribing for two different things here. There's an NFC standard called NDEF, which is NFC data exchange format. There's a few different things that you can use for this. You can use a URL. You can use vCard, like standard MIME type information. You can use something called well-known text. And if you've ever worked with QR codes, this is a standard that came out of QR codes, which is similar to JSON, ability for structured text. Or you can build your own namespace and send binary information backwards and forwards. So for me, because I'm doing two demos, I'm subscribing to two different things. On here, I have some well-known text. So I can jump down, and this passive message received should actually fire. So I'm going to stick a breakpoint in here, hit F5. I didn't fire. Let me try again. There we go. Okay, so I've got that binary message come back off that sticker. So I'm going to jump down now. I've got two. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take that binary and I'm going to read it back into a text file, into some text, or into a string even. Is this big enough for you guys to see? Or do you want me to zoom in? I don't think I can zoom in on this view. What you'll see here is I haven't formatted it properly. I've just converted it to a string just for the matter of actually demoing something. But what this is actually doing is it's passing me some metadata regarding the NDEF standard. So this got it's not correct to start with, but you can actually break that down and actually make it work. And what that the first couple of bytes are, it's the NDEF standard saying this is well-known text and this is the namespace you're working to. So you can subscribe to different namespaces. What the Windows API guys didn't think to do is actually strip that information back out when they passed the message. So you have to do that yourself. But after that, I'm just passing XML backwards and forwards. So coming back to my gym instructor personal trainer scenario, I can put these smart posters around my gym, which allows me as a personal trainer to walk up with my slate and say, okay, we're going to use this equipment. I touch the slate to the smart poster. It then goes and adds that piece of equipment back into that person's training profile. So I don't have to key in. I don't have to look up in the database. Very, very quick and responsive. So stickers are fun. They're always fun. But what's more fun than mobile devices? Because we're geeks and we like electronics. For this one, I'll actually jump across to the other device, but I'll keep this running. So there is no security on NFC, and the reason for that is because it's a proximity thing. You have to get within 5 centimeters of something to trigger it. So the thinking behind it is, if you're getting into 5 centimeters or something and you're reaching in to trigger it, you're consenting to do that. You can lock tags, so these stickers, they can be locked, so you can't override other people's stuff. Normally, when you're kind of doing this stuff, you have to reach right in to touch it, so it's going to be very difficult to spoof this kind of thing. Yeah. Okay, so I responded on the UI here to that sticker coming in, so I'm just going to try and dismiss all these because it's late. Okay. I have a mobile device from someone that's not Microsoft here. So it's an application written in Java. You can kind of guess who makes these types of things, but I couldn't show a Windows Phone 8 because obviously there's none around at the moment. But funnily enough, this vendor supports NFC. It's an international standard, which means it should just work. I can write NFC on this device. It will talk to this device. So think of the scenario. I'm working out in the gym, and I've got my health information on my phone and stuff like that. I'm working on burning all my calories and stuff like that. I don't necessarily want to post it to Facebook, but my personal trainer wants access to this information so they can interpret it. So I take my phone. I stick it on the back of his slate. This phone vibrates. I click it. It comes up straight away. This is an active NFC connection. I can dynamically change the payload on this through the application and send it back across. This is being sent across as an XML file. You can send image data, video data, anything that works. You haven't got a size restriction on this one as so much because you're not saving it on a sticker. So that worked and it was great. So this concept of being able to touch two devices together and they start connecting, very, very important because it's not only application like data that you can send across. It could be an application setting. You could pair two games to start playing with one another instead of having to try and search and seek one another out. You can actually touch two devices together and send that information backwards and forwards. This is what all of the e-wallet stuff is built around, the ability to do payment information by proximity. Walk into a taxi or to a store, put your phone down and actually pay. We're going to see more of this and we have to start using Win8 devices to accept NFC-enabled payments. The other thing it does as well is enables to move to a faster transport mechanism. This is relatively slow in terms of data transfer because it's a self-powered mechanism. We're powering the other device. But Bluetooth or Bluetooth 4 or Wi-Fi Direct, even better, wouldn't it be great if we could just initialize these connections by touching the two devices together? And luckily, the clever guys at the NFC forum actually worked this one out, and Windows 8 fully supports it. We can touch two devices together. We can pass a Mac ID to the other device. We can then initialize a Bluetooth connection or a Wi-Fi connection. We then have an open socket between the two devices, and then we're in proper proximity-style territory, which means we can do things like we could drag a photo to another device. It's the surface for real. We can move this information backwards and forwards. I spent way too long on NFC, but it's my favorite subject, and it's one of the best things about Windows 8 for me. All works in JavaScript, works really well. Okay, touch. Touch first OS, that's pretty obvious. We've got lots of big squares, and it's designed specifically for us to be touching our screens. I used to have this whole piece in this presentation around building custom gestures and diving down into the low levels of touch. People really didn't care because not a lot of people do it. So all I'm really going to say about touch is if you want to make the most of these touch-based inputs, this multi-touch scenario that we have in Windows 8, use the controls. All of the controls subscribe to the gestures offered by Windows 8. So if you're using the out-of-box controls, they are touch-enabled. They're designed that way. If you want something a little bit more custom, you can actually subscribe to Windows input APIs and gesture events that are being raised. So you can say, you can go off and build your own control, and then you can say, tell me when someone has swiped. Am I on the wrong slide deck? That's better. Okay. So all of these gestures, that's what I was just talking about. So you can subscribe to these gestures. You can say, tell me when someone rotates, tell me when someone swipes, and you can start building extra controls up upon these. If you're going to be doing gaming, you can actually subscribe to pointer events. So you can get, in managed code, you can get told the points of touch that you're going to start receiving, and then you can start forming your own gestures up then. But then you're in the territory where we were a couple of years ago with Surface coming out, and even like a few years ago with Kinect coming out, where you've got this raw like information, but you're not really sure how to deal with it. Excuse me. And then lastly, with the input scenarios, that we actually have, and they alluded to this in the keynote, which is quite good, we actually have these pens still, and all these Samsung Series 7 still come with these stylus inputs. So if you're doing something in an enterprise way, like coming back to my gym instructor, she might want to start writing notes on someone's anatomy around where they're training and stuff like that. And the easiest way for her to do that is not necessarily going to be her fat fingers. Not that my fiance has fat fingers, but it's going to be the pen. Like the pen is something we've naturally come to use over the last couple of years. And when Bill Gates launched like Windows XP, like or Windows, yeah, Windows XP, Windows 2000, we've always had this stylus input. It's been around for a while. And up until quite recently, I was presenting on a tablet form factor PC. But these slates all pretty much support pen, and it's one of the big differentiators between this and the competition that Windows still natively supports pen. And especially with controls in HTML5 and in XAML like Canvas to also support the input and ink style mechanism. Pen also has the dexterity of you can, in some pens, you can get the feedback on whether it's a thick line or a thin line based on the inputs that way as well. So if you want to make the most of touch, use the controls, but also have consideration for things like pen. If you want to do something a little bit more custom in gaming and that type of stuff, dive a little bit further down in the input APIs and start subscribing to these events. This is the Windows 8 mantra as well. If you design for touch first, you will get pen and mouse for free because it just works. I'm not really sure where the keyboard kind of falls into that scenario, but this is the way it's always been with Windows 8. There are other devices. I have 5 minutes to talk about every other piece of hardware in Windows 8. Okay, the ones with the light bulbs on I've kind of spoken about, so I'm not going to go into that much detail. But Windows devices dot enumeration. Apart from NFC, this is one of my favorite namespaces, if you can have such a thing. When I showed you the earlier demo around the media capture UI, and the ability to toggle between have that drop-down list that says these are the different devices, different cameras attached to your PC. This is the namespace that does that. And it sounds relatively boring because all it's doing is essentially what Device Manager does. It tells you all the devices attached to your PC. But I can tell this story because I've never told it in Australia. When Windows 8 came to consumer preview and we were given these slates and things like that, I found this namespace and I thought it was a really interesting one and I'd play around with it. And at the time, I'd bought this Samsung Series 7, Samsung Smart TV that was sitting in my living room, nice and shiny, and I connected it to my Wi-Fi. And funnily enough, when I enumerate for these devices, I see my TV. My TV offers itself out as a UPnP device. And UPnP is essentially so it's like a WID store for devices. It exposes services you can subscribe to. So by me going through this device dot enumeration, I found the IP address, I found the WID store that the UPnP device was exposing. I was able to start controlling my TV via a Metro style app. Where this got even funnier was, coming back to my fiance, she was sitting in the living room watching the TV, she kept telling me the TV was broken. And what had turned out was happening is I'd written these little unit tests to test these services out, and every time I was actually running the application, it was going through these series of unit tests, subscribing to these methods on the TV, and it was like change channel, mute volume, turn on volume. But it was funny for me because I worked it out only after a couple of hours, and that's what was going on. I didn't have to replace my TV, but it meant I had this Metro-style app where I could reach out to non-standard devices and control them via UPnP, because that's just there. So enumeration is one of my favorite things because of that. We can do some really funky stuff. But it's also useful because it tells you what you've got attached to your PC. You can go and make sure that we have these devices there before we actually want to start exposing them. Geolocation we've touched, input we've touched, Windows portable devices I'll talk about in a sec. Printers, this is the ability for you to customize some of your print stuff. So if you've got like point of sale apps and you want to have custom print templates and tie into custom printers or CNC machines and stuff like that, that's the namespace that I live in. Sensors, we've talked about. There's a whole load more, but we're kind of running out of time. And SMS. SMS, we don't actually have access to anymore. I put it on there because it's still a namespace, but it's actually depreciated because the telcos have told everyone that they don't want you reading the SMS inboxes on people's devices, so they've actually barred you from using it now. But it's still available in the APIs. Very, very quickly, I have 1.5 minutes to talk about everything on this screen. Bluetooth GAT devices, input devices, other peripherals. Personal training, heart rate monitors. They now make heart rate monitors that are Bluetooth 4 low energy compatible. This means that we can connect to them via a device, such as my lovely Samsung Series 7 device that supports this standard. The problem is the Windows RT devices, Windows RT APIs don't actually expose low-level Bluetooth functionality. We can't get serial port profile or the GAT profile through managed code. So if we want to use this, we actually have to write a custom driver, just a wrapper, not a whole low-level driver, in C++, in C, exposing the GAT services, you install that driver, and then you can actually access them via the Windows Portable Device API. That means you can still get Bluetooth functionality. I still can subscribe to this heart rate monitor and bring it into my application. There's a little bit more work because it goes into native code. Companion apps. Companion apps is a really interesting one if you work with hardware on a full-time basis. Companion apps is the ability for you to sign your application manifest when it gets put, it's the ability for you to sign your hardware manifest with a specific application ID that's in the store. So when you then go in, when a person then attaches that hardware device to Windows, so be a Microsoft Live Cam, Windows will recognize that and say, hey, you've installed application 12345, hardware 12345. It will then quietly in the background reach out to the store and say, it's installed this hardware, we would like this companion app to be installed, and it will actually just automatically download the app from the store. Not so great for the consumer because it means you potentially end up with loads of bloatware on your desktop, but as a hardware manufacturer, it means that you have this capability of making sure that your software, your configuration software is there, there's no overhead, there's no installation capabilities. Okay, that's me dead on time. So Windows 8, loads and loads of stuff. As you can tell, like I'm running out of time just talking about it. There's loads of hardware. It enhances your user experience, it enhances your app, and it's really, really fun to play with. It's very easy, very managed code. So get out there, explore it, and if you have any questions, you can find me on the internet. Thank you.